What's up, everyone?
How's it going? We are back again.
You know how I did it? Said it differently. I said, "What's up, everyone?" Not "What's going on?"
I didn't even catch it.
Aha! Somebody might catch it.
Maybe
I should have said a word.
I don't know.
Fuck.
Maybe you should talk about some headphones real quick, though.
Right. Studio headphones, to be more precise.
Yes.
Go over to studio.com. Check out their headphones and their earbuds. I noticed that they have some brand new earbuds out. They know they have some noise-canceling ones now. Can't remember what their name is, because they're always adding different stuff and changing everything around.
It seems like they add new stuff like monthly for some reason.
Or bi-monthly.
Yeah, it's quarter, like they've always got new stuff coming out, and it's awesome.
But check them out, and when you find exactly what you want, because we know you're going to find what you want there, put it in your checkout basket, or put it in your basket, go to checkout, and put the promo code of DarkWindows15 in to get 15% off.
Yes.
Because, you know, why not?
Also, darkwindowspod.threadless.com. Go get some clothes.
Get some.
Because you shouldn't be listening to this naked.
No.
Anyway, what are we talking about this week?
This week, we're going to do a little switcheroo.
We're going to
sort of.
We're kind of continuing our path of, like, doing badasses here once in a while.
So this week, on this episode of the Dark Windows Podcast, we're going to be covering badasses.
Yes, but we're going to do Black History Month badasses.
Yes.
Because it's February, and we didn't do this last year like
we should have.
We kind of wanted to, and we just kind of got caught up with other stuff. But
we
anyway.
We just forgot.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was supposed to put it that way. We forgot. Yeah. Because, you know, we just get wrapped up in things, and we get sidetracked. We're like, oh, hey, look. Squirrel. Oh,
and honestly, sometimes it's hard to remember whose fucking month is what.
I honestly,
you know,
I don't really care.
I mean, no disrespect by that, but it's like everybody's got a month and I don't know whose is what.
I look at it like this. If you're a badass, you're a badass. Exactly. And I don't really care if it's, you know.
So take it away. Who you got?
Well, this week for this one, I am covering doing something completely different. My badass I chose for this episode is not one of those typical badasses that we cover.
Mine is.
Mine is not. This one is a female.
Okay.
Which, you know, male or female, doesn't matter. It doesn't really make a difference. You can be a badass no matter what. But what I mean by not typical, she did not single-handedly go out and kill 20 or less soldiers to prevent them from advancing. She didn't get on a plane during wartime and, you know, march drugs and stuff like that from one area to another. Didn't get people out of the combat zone. You know, she this wasn't her. This was not her. Yes, she did serve in World War II, but we'll get to that. The lady that I'm covering is Bessie Stringfield. She was not born Bessie Stringfield. She was actually born Betsy Lenora Ellis on February 9th, 1911, which is pretty cool because today's her birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Kind of forgot what today was, to be honest.
I honestly went, wait a minute. Today would have been her birthday.
Happy birthday, buddy.
She was born in Kingston, Jamaica, to Mary Ellis, who was a domestic servant, and James Ferguson, who was Maria's employer.
Aha, okay.
Yes. When she was young, she and her parents immigrated to the U.S., and more specifically, Boston, Massachusetts.
Nice.
Now, when I say her parents, I'm not quite sure if when they were saying parents, if they were referring to, her mom, obviously, but to Mr. Ferguson, I think it may have been another person, another guy that was just what became her dad.
So her kind of stepdad, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't really know because, honestly, I could not find anything that said dad or, you know, Mr. Ferguson or not.
Well, that's fair enough. That's okay. Yeah.
I mean, so I like to be as thorough as possible, but even...
But do you, though?
I do.
Okay.
Anyway, So she immigrated to the U.S. with her parents. Now, she did become a U.S. citizen after immigrating because her parents, you know, went through the whole citizenship
thing. Right, right.
But coming to America, having a happy life was not long. Because because her parents, when she was 5 years old, became sick and both died from smallpox.
What year did they die?
So, she was born, 1916.
Okay.
So it was during that time of the whole...
The reason I ask is because I was wondering, I'm like, did they get lucky with smallpox and avoid the Spanish flu? But no, they were a couple years ahead of that, but still lucky, apparently, because the Spanish flu, I guess, sucked.
Yeah.
But I never had it, so...
Well, hopefully you don't have it.
You never know, man.
Hard telling, not knowing.
And start eating fucking bats and get coronavirus, so...
Ooh. Bats are juicy, though.
Ugh.
So, her parents got sick, like I said, and they died from smallpox, and she became an orphan. So she went to live at an orphanage, like most kids that are parentless. But she wouldn't be there for long because she would soon be adopted by an Irish woman who raised her in a very strong Catholic upbringing. And when Bessie was 16, her adopted mother gave her a motorcycle.
Awesome.
Yes.
Happy birthday, kid.
In an interview she gave to Anna Farrar, in her book, primary sourced Hear Me Roar, Women, Motorcycles, and the Rapture of the Road, Bessie revealed to the author how she drew courage from her faith to Jesus Christ, whom she called the man upstairs. So it's just, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that.
Because that's where she got, you know, because of her adopted mother, she got this, you know, faith. And she decided that, well, I'm going to start riding this bike. So at 16, never riding a bike or anything, she hopped on it and took off. Then she also goes on to say in this interview that when I was in high school, I wanted a motorcycle, and I got one, she said. Her first bike was a 1928 Indian Scout, which as soon as I heard that, I went, oh,
that's a pretty sick bike.
I know. Yeah. But at the time, that's kind of like...
It was pretty standard issue at the time, but now we look back at it and we're like, oh, fucking Indian? Yeah, buddy.
Now...
I actually have an old enamel Indian motorcycle sign in my basement.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking cool.
It is.
Yeah.
It is
actually I can start moving that shit up here into the studio.
I know. It actually is pretty cool. Because I got some old Remington stuff, right? Is it Remington or didn't you have some other type of?
Oh, I can't remember what it was. I've got that. I've got an old Camel cigarettes one down there.
Oh, man.
There's a bunch of them because the cool. The people we bought the house from are just like, they just left it here. And I'm like, fucking yes.
Yeah. So like I said, not having any prior knowledge of operations, she just was like, you know what, the hell with it. And
worst is gonna happen is you're gonna fall off of it.
Yeah, well, she just threw caution to the wind and got on and just went for it.
Well, I mean,
and
yeah,
she proved to be a natural.
You're a kid, you're not afraid of anything, you know,
but
you're not smart enough to be afraid of anything at 16.
Yeah, true.
I wasn't, at least.
And like I the reason why I had given that quote before about she drew courage from Jesus Christ and that, you know, she called him a man upstairs was because she insisted that the man upstairs gave her the skills to be a natural on the bike and just get on it and go.
But what if we're all wrong and the guy she's talking about was actually like an upstairs neighbor? It's like some Greek dude. This guy gave me a motorcycle. He's pretty fucking awesome. Thanks, guy upstairs.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know.
That'd be fun, though.
True. Now, I did find that in one source, she actually got rid of her Indian and then went to a 27 Harley Davidson motorcycle.
Nice.
But I don't really know. I mean, it doesn't really... A lot of the things kind of left part of it out. Some of them left it in. So, it, you know, just
spoiler alert for my half of the episode.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, this is kind of why I picked her, was because
she had a motorcycle
and
probably a leather coat. She just looked like a badass.
Yeah, but also think about the time.
Oh, that's true.
She's a badass because, well, she's a woman. She's on a motorcycle.
Well, let's be more specific. She's a black woman in the 1920s.
Doesn't matter. She's a woman first. Well, that's the part that's, you know, big time. Being a woman in, you know, when she's 16 years old, so in 1920s, getting a motorcycle, you know, women at that time did not get on a motorcycle and ride it. They were at home or somewhere else. They wore long dresses and all this good stuff. I guarantee she didn't wear a dress when she was on a motorcycle.
That's a good way to burn your ankles.
Yeah. But this also broke barriers down because she, like I said, because she was riding that motorcycle. And, well, as you said, she was black, you know, but I mean, being...
That was a much bigger deal back then than it is now.
Well, the biggest part at this point in time was because that she was a woman. It wasn't because she was black.
Okay.
At this point in time, this particular time, it was just because she was a woman on a motorcycle.
But this is also the same time when, you know, blacks were not allowed to serve in the same units as whites during the war. But, you know.
Well, but that's neither here nor there. This is just because she's a woman and she's on a motorcycle. Okay. Now, she did break that barrier down even further. And she went into the part that being African-American. Because she threw caution to the wind and said, you know what? I want to go out and explore. I want to go and see other places. So she took a penny, flicked it up in the air, and it landed on a map. And wherever it landed on the map, she went.
Okay, that's pretty cool. It would have been cooler if she did that with a globe and got it to stay somewhere.
And she actually did this enough that she was able to actually cover most of the lower 48.
No shit.
So, yeah, she was to most of the, like, the southern states.
Well, I mean, back then there was only 48, so.
Well, she was in most of the, you know, not all the lower 48. She was just in the southern part of the United States. So, down south. That's where she went through. So she covered most of that, which, this is the part where being a black person was an honor motorcycle. You know, she has one strike against her because, well, A, she's a woman and she's on a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
The next strike is, well, she's a woman and she's black and she's on a motorcycle. You know, that's...
Yeah.
During that time, that's like...
That was the biggest crime you could commit in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of says that she had some fortitude.
Yeah, you gotta have lady balls to be able to do that. I mean...
Yeah. She would say that her faith got her through the nights on the road. In an interview for that same book that I mentioned above, which was Hear Me Roar... during her trip across the country, she would stop and do tricks to demonstrations to the crowd that would gather around, which to me is number three strike because you're doing something that man would do.
Now you're being a fucking juvenile delinquent on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
With your wheelies and whatnot.
Yeah.
You sons of bitches.
But you're also stepping into a man's world because, I mean, only men do this, you know. That's not a woman's place. A woman shouldn't be, you know, doing tricks, standing up on a bike, and putting themselves into danger.
Hey, it's hard to do fucking wheelies on a motorcycle when you're supposed to be in the kitchen. Just saying.
I know. But she was like, I'm not doing that. I'm definitely not doing that. And in an interview she gave in the Hear Me Roar book, or it's not really a book. It's more like a, I can't think of the word, but it's a like a living biography, because when women, the women actually speak about what their experiences are.
Okay.
She recorded this quote. She said, "If you had a black, if you had black skin, you didn't get a place to stay. I knew the Lord would take care of me, and He did. I found black folks. I'd stay with them. If not, I'd sleep at a filling stations." At filling stations on my motorcycle. So she basically said, the man upstairs is going to take protect me no matter what. And that's kind of, you know, ballsy.
Yeah.
Really. To say, I don't have a place to stay, so I'm going to just stay at a filling station. And the man upstairs, he's going to protect me. But being in the South.
Yeah.
That's, like I said, took big cojones.
Yeah.
To do, because I mean,
who the fuck does that now?
Yeah, but I mean, then you don't know what's gonna happen to you, because you don't know if some, you know, white folk are gonna come along that are so racist. I'm not saying every single one in the South was racist, but I'm saying that a vast majority were. Would come along and they could have lynched her.
Or worse,
you know, just because she was a black woman, you know, out on a motorcycle. And who'd you steal that bike from? And,
yeah. You
know, thinking that it wasn't hers and would want to, you know, take care of business.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, people are shitty. It doesn't matter what fucking color you are, when it is, people are generally shitty.
Yeah. And I guess that's part of the reason why I picked her, was because she did something like this. She said, you know what? Screw you, world.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm going to do what I want to do. And I don't know if it's maybe a combination of her biological mother saying, hey, you know what? And her dad saying, throwing caution in the winds, and hey, we're gonna get the hell out of Jamaica, and we're gonna go to the United States and make a better living. Or her adopted mother, who said, "Screw it, this girl wants a motorcycle. I'm gonna get her one. I don't care."
Yeah,
you know, I mean, she may have. I don't really know. They don't really talk much about her. But I would guarantee she was one of those strong-willed women that was like, hey, you know, women can do just as much as men. I don't care. Maybe I might be past my time, but you know what? Let's let her have it and let her go with it, because the man upstairs is going to help.
Right.
She didn't care, and, you know, like I said, being strong-willed, she didn't really care about anything anything happened to her. And she's like, you know, I need money. So she'd do the stunt riding, like I mentioned previously. And she would also, this is the cool part, which I was really ballsy on her part. She would get on her motorcycle and go to flat tracks.
No shit.
Yeah. And she would race. Not only would she race, she would win.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so I'm guessing she's racing other motorcycles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, on a flat track. Yeah, it's, you know, you just kind of, mostly you're sideways a lot of the time.
Right.
You know, just go around the track. But to do that.
That's fucking
crazy. Because. It's a man's world type of thing.
It's fucking dangerous. That's why
it is.
That's why women weren't expected to be doing shit back then.
And then when the track owners would find out that she was a woman, they would refuse to pay her the money that she was due.
Yeah, because you're not supposed to be beating men at fucking racing.
No.
Fuck out of here.
She would then take this.
Fucking crazy broads take a hike.
I know. So then she would take this desire to travel even further. Between the 1930s and the early 1940s, she made 8 long-distance solo rides across the U.S. And then she would also go to Brazil, Europe.
That's a long fucking ride to Europe.
Well, she'd get on a fucking boat.
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
She goes over the fucking Arctic or something and
yeah,
pops down into England, you know, the fucking Russia, and then back across and through the tunnel over, you know, through the channel.
Exactly.
Who the fuck knows? You don't know.
Maybe she got going fast enough on her bike that she was like, I'm going to sail right across the water.
I'm going to tell you right now. This is all I've got to say about that. Anyway.
Whatever.
Yep.
Well, so now at this point, we're 1940s, middle of 1940s, and World War II has just kicked off.
Mm.
And she, being a strong-willed woman, decides that she is going to help in any way that she can, like most people of the time.
And she joined the German army.
She did. Uncle Adolf wanted her to join and said, you know what, sweetheart, come join me.
Then he found out she was a black woman and he shot himself in the face.
Yes, because she pretended to be a black man. And
no, she pretended to be a white man. That's why he was so shocked when he took her mask off and it was a black girl. And he's like, was ist das? And just shot himself in the teeth.
Ah, uh-huh.
And that's how World War II ended.
Did it?
I don't know.
That's a new ending to me. Huh. So just like most people, she decided that she was going to help in any way that she could. So she decided to become a civilian dispatch rider for the army.
Okay, what exactly is that?
Well, she would carry documents between domestic bases on her, so from one base to another. That's what a dispatch rider is.
Pony Express style.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she did it on her own Harley Davidson.
I think at that point in time, I'd have been like, hey, listen. You guys need to give me a bike because you're not paying me for mileage. You're not paying for my maintenance. Like, let's figure this shit out.
Well, she was the only woman in her unit. And she completed the rigorous training maneuvers, including learning how to weave a makeshift bridge from rope and tree limbs to cross swamps.
That's pretty cool.
It's badass. So Bessie regularly encountered racial prejudice while on the road. Which is, you know, no surprise.
Yeah.
Once she was followed by a man in a pickup truck who deliberately ran her into a ditch, violently knocking her off a bike.
What a fucking dink.
Yeah. She, Bessie would make ambitious motorcycle rides across, like I said, Europe, Brazil, and she also went to Haiti.
Again, long fucking ride on a motorcycle.
But
unless she put skis on that bitch or something and just like jet skied it across,
yeah,
that'd be fucking rad.
But between these rides and after becoming a courier, she did make time, however, to get married and divorced 6 times.
Holy shit. Yes. Oh my God.
She and her first husband were deeply saddened by the loss of 3 babies.
That'll do it.
And Bessie had no more children.
I would probably be in the same boat. Like, you try 3 times and, yeah.
Yeah. And she actually kept the name of her last husband, which was Stringfield.
Okay.
Because this was at his request. Because, you know, must have been in love with her that much. She was like, okay, hey, this is not working out between us. But you know what? Will you at least keep my last name?
Yeah.
And she said, sure. But it was also because he felt that she was going to make the name famous.
Ah. As well. That's probably mostly that.
Well, because of what she was accomplishing.
Right. And because he probably hadn't accomplished shit.
Probably.
Yeah.
Could be. Damn men. And they're...
Okay. Settle down.
So in the 1950s, Bessie settled in Miami, Florida. She became a licensed practical nurse and founded the Iron Horse Motorcycle Club. She had the jacket and all. She was the MC. She was the leader.
The fucking hat and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And then she also became a salsa dance instructor because she didn't have anything else to fucking do.
I guess, and her days of racing weren't done as well, because like one time she also raced again, and she took off her helmet, and the officials were blown away because she pretended to be a male, and they were like, whoa.
And then they're just like, yeah, beat it, motherfucker. We ain't paying you. Good job, though. A little smack on the butt on the way out.
Yeah.
It was the 40s. You were allowed to do that still.
It's true. 50s at this time.
Whatever.
But still, they could still do
that. Dude, you could smoke in a fucking office. They're just like, hey, good job, kid.
That is true.
Smack on the ass and on your way.
Her other antics that, besides riding on a dirt track, flat track, were... she would ride her Harley while standing in its saddle, meaning on the seat.
You know, people still do that, and I still think it's stupid. It's a really dumb idea.
It really is. But she did it to attract local press attention.
Okay. So people now do it to get famous on YouTube, and then they fall and smack their heads open on the concrete.
Yeah. I mean, she did attract attention so much that reporters called her Stringfield, the Negro Motorcycle Queen, which was later changed to the Stringfield, the Motorcycle Queen of Miami.
Fair enough. She must have toppled the white motorcycle queen too, and the Hispanic one. She's like, no, she's actually the queen now.
I don't know.
Full blown.
Who knows? The Queen of Hearts is done, you know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know where you're going with this, man.
I don't know either. But in absence of children, she found joy in her pet dogs, some of whom paraded with her on her motorcycle, which I have seen before, and I think it's fucking stupid.
No, it's cool if you get them like a sidecar and like goggles and a helmet and shit. That's awesome.
I bet I would you do she that didn't, with my though.
Dog. No, probably not. It's just like, no way. Fuck it, hop on, dude.
She was like, your ass is sitting in the front.
Yeah.
Sit there and shut up.
Probably like a fucking Great Dane or something. It's like his nuts are just dragging on the back tire. Oh.
I don't know.
Mom, don't stop. Don't hit the brakes, Mike. I'm going to get caught.
This is going to suck. In 1990, when the American Motorcycle Association, the AMA, opened the first Motorcycle Heritage Museum in Pickerington, Ohio, Stringfield was featured in its inaugural exhibit on women in motorcycling. And then late in life, she had suffered from symptoms caused by an enlarged heart, and she died in Opa-locka, Florida in 1993 at the age of 82.
I was going to say, yeah, she must have been fairly old. That's, hey, yeah. Shit, she had a good run.
Now, she wouldn't be in... And the reason why I mentioned the AMA is because she was featured in it, but she wasn't inducted into it.
Okay.
She wouldn't be inducted until 2002, so posthumously she was
right
inducted. The American Motorcyclist Association would then make up an award for her,
right,
calling it the Bessie Stringfield Memorial Award. And it is now presented to recognize outstanding achievements by female motorcyclists. And I did find a quote while doing my research, and I feel that I should read it because it sums up how wonderful and extraordinary this woman is.
The Bessie Stringfield Battle Royale Invitational. It's a golf tournament.
She'd go in dressed as a fucking man.
It was just like, it was in my head and I had to get it out.
Who's this Bessie Stringfield? It's some guy. You know Bessie Stringfield, right? And she'd be like, surprise, motherfuckers, I'm Bessie Stringfield. I'm a female.
She comes out. It's like, looks like the Ultimate Warrior, and she just peels the mask off, and it's just her. You're like, what the fuck? How'd she do that? Cocaine. That's how.
So like I said, I found a quote that she had given to Anne Ferrar in the book or memoir that I mentioned earlier. And the quote is, now these are, I have to preface this, my words, not hers. Her words, not mine. Sorry.
Okay. I was going to be like, wait a minute here.
They're all types of rugged, and not all of them are physical. It takes tough mental grit, foresight, planning, and craftiness to do what Bessie did in the Jim Crow era and get away with it. So that was from Anna Ferrar. And what she meant by all types of rugged and not all of them physical, meaning women.
Also, like, just being hard as fuck, like, yeah. Emotionally, yeah.
She would
and go, mentally, to go, you know what? I'm going to sleep at a fucking gas station. See what happens.
Yeah. She would go on to say, Bessie was not a standard bearer for the organization, for the organized civil rights movement, or for the women in general. She couldn't be, as she was ahead of both those movements. I called her a one-woman civil rights movement, and that phrase has often been repeated. But what I meant was Bessie let nothing stand in her way, despite racial or gender prejudice. She was an outstanding and brave individual, which basically sums up
that's
who she was.
She's a bad bitch, dude.
Yeah, she was like, fuck you all.
Yeah.
I'm doing what the fuck I want. And... kiss my ass.
Yeah.
And guess
pretty
what?
Much.
I ain't letting no goddamn man send in my way.
Okay, let's settle down.
There is a Facebook page that you can go to look up more about Bessie Stringfield. And all you have to do is just type in her name.
Okay.
And you can, like I had mentioned previous, the one of the sources I used, which is Anna Ferrar's primary source book called Hear Me Roar, Women, Motorcycles, and the Rapture of the Road. You can look at that, too, as well.
Awesome.
If you want to find out more about Bessie Stringfield.
Awesome. So we're going to take our quick break, and we'll be right back with, spoiler alert, I went completely stereotypical with the kind of badass that I cover. Bye.
The Dark Windows Podcast is brought to you by The Great Courses Plus. The Great Courses Plus is a subscription video on-demand service with thousands of in-depth videos taught by the world's greatest professors. You'll always have something fascinating to learn about. With categories ranging from history to travel, there's something for everyone. The courses I'm personally looking forward to checking out are the 36-part series on the Vikings and the 24-part series, The Agency, A History of the CIA. If you go to ageofradio.org/darkwindows, there's an offer to get the Great Courses Plus for 14 days free. Stay ahead in life. Start your access today with 11,000-plus video and audio lectures on a range of topics. Now, let's get back to the show.
Okay. So, did you enjoy that ad like you do every time you hear it? We got to get another one going. Anyway.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
Ha ha.
Yeah. So, continuing on with our Black History Month badasses, I'm going to cover somebody that I had never heard of until I started looking into just like, I have a book. It's called Badass, and it's got by Ben Thompson. It's fucking awesome. I was flipping through it, and I saw this guy, and I went, oh, wait a minute. I think this is my guy. So,
was it, though? Was it your man?
Yeah. This is a man who was born into and then escaped slavery, fought for a short period in time during the Civil War, and went on to become a legendary lawman who could have very, very easily been lost to history due to his race and the laws of the 19th and 20th century. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about Bass Reeves.
Okay.
Got a little bit of a a neat thing to talk about at the very end of it, too, with him. Bass Reeves was born in Crawford County, Arkansas, in 1838. He was named Bass after his grandfather, Bass Washington, which...
Bass Washington.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, first part, I can see, but so the last part is after George Washington?
No idea.
Or was it... Well, I was going to say Booker T. Washington, but he's later.
Are you talking five-time WCW champion Booker T?
No, you asshole.
Seriously, who was more important? Hmm?
Booker T. Washington, the non-wrestler?
I doubt it. Come on, man. Five-time champion.
And the five-time champion was just called Booker T. He wasn't called Booker T. Washington.
He was originally Booker T. Washington, though.
Where did he get it from?
I don't know. Maybe a famous dude. Dumbass. It was WCW. They had fucking stupid names for everybody.
Okay.
Anyway, his family, and I really hate the fact that I have to use this term, was owned by Arkansas legislator William Reeves, hence the surname of Reeves.
Okay.
Because
a lot of... It's one of those things, it's history, but I'm going to say it. A lot of people that were black then, if they would take the last name of their owner.
Yeah,
the slave
because
owner.
You're my property, you have my name.
Well, no, a lot of even if they were set free or whatever, they could have just chose their own name. They still took that name.
Fair enough. So, sometime around 1848, Reeves packed up his family and slaves and moved to Grayson County, Texas, where his son George was living at the time. George was a sheriff and one-time speaker of the House for the state of Texas. When the Civil War broke out, George Reeves joined up with the Confederate side, obviously being Texas, mm-hmm. not really a northern state, and he took off to war. He took 10-year-old Bass with him. Okay, I don't know why, if it was maybe like, hey, you're going to stay here and take care of my shit while I go out and pretend I'm a fucking hero. Maybe. Who knows?
Well, that's probably why.
So one night, George and Bass were playing cards. They got into an argument. Just who knows about what? History has fucking lost this detail. Keep in mind, George Reeves is a grown-ass man, and at this point, Bass Reeves is 10 years old.
Yeah.
The argument keeps escalating and it's getting more and more heated to the point that it got physical. Bass Reeves, again, a fucking child.
Don't tell me he beat the shit out of
him. Beat the living shit out of George Reeves. Beat his ass.
I don't know why, but I saw it coming.
After leaving a man probably at least twice his age in a pool of his own shame, Bass escaped north and across the Red River into Indian Territory, which is modern day Oklahoma.
Which... Natives despised black people just as much.
Not in this case. So he ended up meeting up with a group of Cherokee who took him in and treated him like one of their own. Because he was a kid. You know, they're not going to be like, fuck you, get out of here.
True.
You know? So they fed him, they gave him a place to live, and they would also give him the skill set that would make him a mega effective lawman in the future. They taught him horseback riding.
Tracking,
shooting. And by the time the 13th Amendment was passed, he was fluent in all in the languages of the what they refer to as the five civilized tribes, which were the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Creek, and Seminole. So after slavery ended and he became a freedman, he remained in Indian Territory and started up a farm and ended up marrying a Seminole Indian woman.
Really?
The two of them had 11 kids together.
Well, that's not uncalled. That's right. not uncalled for. It's not unheard of.
Right. Very fertile people.
Well, no, the thing is, at that time,
yeah, I know.
Having 11 kids was what you did.
But when you have 11 kids and all of them survive, that's fucking magic.
True.
So he would actually split his time between farming and raising his family and occasionally from time to time working as a scout for the U.S. Marshal Service.
Mm-hmm.
On a side note, I had to put this in here because I found it really awesome. in 1882, George Reeves, his former owner, died of fucking rabies. It's like, how often do people die of rabies? Like, never? And it couldn't have happened to a nicer asshole. In the early 1870s, he went from being a part-time scout to a full-blown marshal when Isaac Parker was appointed federal judge of the Indian Territory by President Ulysses S. Grant. Parker was sometimes referred to as the hanging judge because there was, over the course of a single day, he put somewhere, history's kind of foggy on it, between 6 and 10 criminals to death by hanging. But in the grand scheme of things, of the 13,000 some odd trials that he held, he only had about 400 men executed. At a time where you could be executed for fucking anything, ain't bad. You know? Could be a fairly lenient guy. Seems like he'd be understanding. But if you stole horses, you were going to, you know.
So pretty much the hangman judge was just a kind of a...
It was a nickname he got because he was having a bad day.
Yeah, or just kind of like a scare tactic.
Yeah. So it ended up getting to the point that Parker needed more lawmen, and he put out the call for more marshals. Bass Reeves was one of the first men to answer this call. He would work out of the courthouse slash jail in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Him and Judge Parker had a really good working relationship because Parker wanted criminals caught, and Bass Reeves, being the badass motherfucker that he was, wanted to catch bad guys. So it worked out well.
Wow, still a hard job because you're still black.
Right. When he was sworn in, this would officially make him the first black lawman west of the Mississippi River. He was one of 200 marshals hired on for the entirety of the Indian Territory. But what made him more special is he was one of the very few that was fluent in the languages of the five tribes. Here's an interesting fact with a little bit of foreshadowing towards our final trivia piece. Bass usually rode through Indian Territory with a member of the Light Horse, which was the tribal police of the five tribes. Anybody picking that up yet? Maybe? Okay, that's fine. So let's talk about some of the really badass stuff that Bass Reeves carried out in his 32-year career. 32 years in one of the most dangerous areas in the country, at one of the most dangerous times in the history of the country to be an African-American, especially one that has authority over people.
Yeah.
So he ran across a man by the name of Jim Webb. Webb was a sadistic, cruel, murderous piece of shit. He would shoot people basically as soon as look at him, especially if they happened to be black. Wasn't a big fan. So one day he rode to his neighbor's house, who had started a brush fire to clear some old deadfall and dried brush and stuff like that. And the fire had spread to a very, very small remote corner of Webb's property. So Webb confronted the neighbor, who just so happened to be a black preacher. And after yelling at him for starting a fire and damaging his property, Webb didn't even hesitate, pulled out a six shooter and killed him right there on his front doorstep. When word of the murder got back to Judge Parker, he issued a warrant for Jim Webb. He wanted him dead or alive, didn't matter. He wanted him brought to justice for what he'd done. So as soon as the paper warrant hit his hands, Reeves was off. He was a bloodhound. As soon as he got the scent, he wouldn't stop until he got his guy. Mm-hmm. The day came down to bring Webb in. Reeves and another U.S. Marshal rode out to his property and approached him. Reeves stepped onto the porch. You know, he's like, hey, we've had a long ride. Do you guys have anything to eat? Anything to drink? The whole time, they're kind of keeping their jackets closed so that the U.S. Marshal badges on their chest aren't showing, because you show that around this guy, you're dead. Doesn't matter what color you are, he's going to kill you. So another kind of little side note, Bass Reeves couldn't read or write. I mean, it wasn't something he was allowed to do as a child because he was a slave, and slaves obviously didn't need to read or write. So he became very good at confronting people and going, hey, I was riding through. I told somebody where I was going, and the postmaster said, hey, would you drop this letter off for him? He'd hand him the letter. Guy would open it up, and it's the warrant. Because as soon as he filled the bad guy's hands with paper, he filled his hands with steel. He did the exact same thing right here. Hands webbed the warrant, saying, oh, they wanted me to give you this letter. This isn't a letter. This is a warrant. And as soon as he said that, fucking Bass Reeves draws down on him. You're coming with me. So they end up taking this dirt bag in. I forgot to mention the fact that as soon as he pulled his gun, one of Webb's associates started running his mouth and went to pull his. And before he could clear leather, Bass dropped his ass with a single shot to the chest. So Webb went in pretty calmly after that. Bass Reeves was a rare shooter. He had the combination of being lightning fast and deadly accurate, which a lot of people don't have. You can either be one or the other.
Yeah.
So according to some of the newspapers of the day, especially the ones around the Oklahoma area, some would claim that Bass Reeves killed upwards of 14 men, and they said 13 were in self-defense. The 14th was a complete accident. One night while out on the trail, he and his posse were sitting around the fire, having dinner, laughing, having a good time. Bass is sitting there cleaning his rifle. Didn't realize, sadly, that there was a round in the chamber, and when he set it across his lap, the handle of his knife caught the trigger and fired the rifle. The round exited the barrel, obviously, hit the cook in the face, like hit him in the side of the face. He didn't die instantly, but he did pass away despite the best efforts of Bass trying to save his life. Like he's holding the guy down, like trying to keep pressure on it. He's sending people to get help, and he ended up dying anyway.
Yeah.
So lawman or not, murder is murder. And he would go in to face his fate in the courtroom of Judge Parker. After a very lengthy trial, like weeks upon weeks, and against the best efforts of the prosecuting attorney who wanted him hanged because, surprise, surprise, he didn't like black people, Bass Reeves was found innocent and allowed to return to work. Because the defense attorney basically made the argument, would someone who intentionally meant to kill somebody expend that much time and effort trying to save their life? Absolutely not.
Exactly.
Absolutely not. Now, would this have been the same outcome if it had been any other former slave? I don't think so. I think the fact that he was put on trial by someone he had a very good working relationship with ended up giving him a little bit of leeway here and there, you know? But shortly after the trial, Reeves was on the hunt again. And again, it was for Jim Webb, who had somehow escaped prison during the trial. This time it was going to end differently. One man is headed home. The other one is headed for a pine box. Bass Reeves tracks Webb down to where he's staying at one of his friend's cabins. Webb went over and kind of like separated the curtains because he heard somebody riding up. And as soon as he saw Bass Reed, sounds like a fucking jazz musician.
Good old Bass Reed.
Yeah. Bass Reed and his 5-piece orchestra. So as soon as he saw Bass riding up, he opened the door and starts fucking throwing lead at him. Bass took cover behind a fence post, which was pretty impressive considering he was anywhere between 6'2" and 6'5", and he was well over 200 pounds. He was built like a brick shit house. He was a big man. The two exchanged gunfire. Bass narrowly avoided losing his head when a bullet passed through the top of his hat. But today was his day. He cocked his lever action, aimed and fired, hitting Webb in the stomach. Dropped him. So when Webb hit the grass, Reeves approached and checked on him. Bass Reeves didn't strike me as the kind of person who maliciously wanted to go out and kill people. You know, It was just part of his job occasionally to have to shoot some asshole. So according to some stories, Jim Webb used his dying breath to actually pay respect to the lawman and gave him his pistol as a show of respect, which for a guy who was a notorious racist and an all-around scumbag, not a bad way to end your life, I guess. There was a couple other ones that I found. There was one in 1885 where he was sent out to bring in three brothers. Their last name was Brunter. They were pretty notorious, like cop killers and burglars, horse thieves, basically your run-of-the-mill shithead for back in the day. He walked up to them because they were kind of standing in like a semicircle, I guess, the way they explained it. He walked up to the one in the middle, handed him a note, said, "Hey, they wanted me to give you a letter." And again, the guy opens it and goes, "This ain't no letter. This is a warrant." And he, by the time he finished saying warrant, Bass had drawn and killed the other two. Like, just fucking pew, pew, two shots, two dead men. And the other one's like, "Okay, well, I guess I'm coming with you then, aren't I?" He was a fucking badass, dude. Like, the more I read about him, the more I'm like, this is the guy. But one of the most interesting ones I found was, again, in 1885, Bass receives another bounty. This one hit kind of close to home for me because it's a little bit of a callback, because the warrant he was given was to arrest the Bandit Queen Belle Starr, who was one of our earlier episodes.
Yeah.
Reeves and Belle actually apparently were on some kind of friendly terms. They dealt with each other many times, and they kind of knew some of the same people. Reeves would sometimes inform her that, you know, "Hey, you're wanted in Fort Smith for something. You may want to, you know, avoid the area."
Yeah.
It's not really known why they were friendly with each other. But the only time that this wasn't the only time they'd run into each other, and basically came back and said, I missed her. I couldn't find her." So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. This next one was probably the hardest warrant he would ever have to serve. He had to hunt down his own son, Benny. Benny was wanted for killing his wife and going on the lam afterwards. When he found out about the murder and he saw that someone else had got the warrant, he walked up to him and took it out of his hands and said, "This is my family. I'll handle it myself." That had to have been like heartbreaking as a father, but also like, "I find you, I'm going to kick your ass," because, you know.
Yeah.
So here was the real question. If he found Benny and he drew down on him, would Bass hesitate? What do you think? Do you think if his kid had drawn down on him, he would have showed any hesitation and not just fucking blasted him right there?
It's hard telling not knowing, because you don't know what type of father he was.
Right.
So part of me wants to say, yes, he would have. But the other part is kind of like, I don't know, because I don't know what kind of dad he was.
Right.
So if that's kind of my conundrum.
So he did end up tracking Benny down. He found him camped out, sleeping next to his fire. Woke him up and took him in without incident. There's no shots fired, no like ill words spoken, just like, "Hey, come on, you know, we got to take care of this, you know." So Benny would actually be convicted for the murder. He would serve his time in Leavenworth, Kentucky, and when he was released, he went on to become a model citizen. So, I mean, after that, no more run-ins with the law. He was a model prisoner while he was there.
Well, I mean, we don't know what dear dad said to him,
right,
or did to him on the way.
Cause... And, I mean, he was a kid when he killed his wife. He was like 17, 18 years old. So, I mean, it's still no excuse to kill somebody, but you're a kid. You got time to fix yourself.
Very true.
So his 32-year career as a marshal in the Indian Territory would come to an end when Oklahoma became a state in 1907. He would, however, become an officer in the Muskogee Police Department at the age of 68 years old. 68 years old, and he's like, "Eh, I still got it. No problem," you know. The shitty thing is that after a lifelong career of catching bad guys, which he, like, once Jim Crow laws took effect, he was basically, well, not basically, he became a second-class citizen. Like, he would walk into places where, you know, he used to be able to talk to people and they would have respect for him, and now they're just like, "Fuck off, get out of here." You know, he'd go sit down in his local restaurant or whatever, and he would be told, "You can't sit here, you need to go somewhere else, blah, blah, blah." You know, that shit.
Racism took over.
Yeah. Which is weird, because it's like, these are the people that he would have fucking breakfast or lunch or whatever with all the time. And then once it became legal to be a piece of shit, they're just like, okay, might as well do it, right?
Well, it wasn't legal. I mean, it was... because it
less
was,
frowned it was, upon.
Well, the thing is, it was still frowned upon then. I mean, they still didn't like you if you were black, you know, during his time that he was a marshal.
But these were people that had had mutual respect for each other. And then when the Jim Crow laws took in, it was just like none of it happened.
Yeah, but he had less power though too.
Right.
Which, because if he was still a marshal. The black guy that's Marshall, well, all right, we got to pay him respect because we might need him to do something for us one day. And
yeah.
You know, so kind of one hand washes another in that situation.
Yeah.
But the old man that's a cop or whatever, or was a cop, whatever.
Bass Reeves would end up passing away in 1910 of kidney disease. He had an amazing career. There was more than a handful of sources that I looked through claimed that he brought somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 bad guys into justice.
Wow.
It's like, that's a lot. That's like almost 100 a year for 32 years.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of, you know.
He was there for 32 years?
Yep.
And he brought in how many?
3,000.
Well,
it's a little over 100 a year.
Well, that 3,200 would be 100 a year.
Yeah, not bad, kid, you know. One of his biggest busts was when he actually brought 17 men into jail by himself. And there is a really popular fan theory. Remember I said we had a little bit of a fun thing at the very end here? Very popular fan theory that the story and radio show of the Lone Ranger is based on Bass Reeves. Kind of makes sense when you think about it. There are a lot of parallels. Both were no bullshit lawmen. Both used disguises to get to the bad guys. They were tricky. Both rode around with an Indian companion. And if anyone ever stood for truth, justice, and the American way, it would have been Bass Reeves. He was an interesting dude. I did get a lot of my stuff from a YouTube documentary that I watched. It's called Legends and Lore of the Old West. It's directed by a guy that I'm sure a lot of people don't like, but he did a really good job of the series. I watched a couple of them. It's Bill O'Reilly. I watched a few of them in the series. They're all really well done.
Bill, he's a
historian.
Just because you don't like his politics doesn't mean that he's not good at historical type stuff.
Right.
He really is. He knows his stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's a very smart man.
Yeah.
One of the other things I ran into on YouTube, I had a hard time with this because I kind of got sucked into it for a little bit and I regret it. One of the next videos that popped up was from a different channel claiming that Bass Reeves wasn't a black man because he was light-skinned black. And I was like, okay, sure. And then I started watching more of these videos and I'm like, this is kind of fucking weird. Because like a lot of these people that they're talking about on here, you have like, you obviously had Bass Reeves, you had fucking Red Fox, Marvin Gaye, like all these guys are like, oh, they're not black because they're light skinned. I'm like, the fuck runs this channel? I was like, oh, this is a black guy running this channel. Like, so kind of being racist to your own people, which is fucking dumb. It's like, what, why? Who cares?
It's prejudice within your own.
Yeah, it's like, who cares if he was light? If
it doesn't matter.
It's like his pain. Okay, the reason that he was light skinned is because most likely the owner of the fucking plantation that he grew up on was most likely his father. But that doesn't matter.
Well,
he still went through just as much bullshit as anybody else did back then.
Well, the thing is, also, not every single it's not everybody that's African is like dark as hell. Right,
exactly.
You know, look at everything. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like Manute Bol, okay, he was the blackest black man I have probably ever seen play basketball.
But that dude was like 8 feet tall.
He was. He was. And
he was legitimately like 7'7", wasn't he?
Something like that. Yeah, close to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I still, you know, he came from Africa, yeah. But he was, you know, super, super dark. But then you got other people that came from Africa that were
not
as dark, you know, which is, but that's just the nature of
It's life. Called the genetic lottery.
Or just
everybody's different, you know. True. I did have a special mention for one other guy that I really, really wanted to put the time into and do a on here and have three, but I couldn't justify it. Like, he has to have his own. That is Doris Miller, who was a cook during World War II.
Yeah.
He was on I can't remember what ship it was during Pearl Harbor. And the ship got attacked by kamikazes.
I thought it was the Arizona.
No, it wasn't the Arizona. It was a different one. But he ended up saving the captain of the ship, then fucking manning an AA gun that he had never even laid hands on and shooting down a bunch of Japanese planes. And I believe it's this year or beginning of next year, they've commissioned a new aircraft carrier and they're naming it after him, which is fucking incredible. He will be the first African-American service member to have an aircraft carrier, any kind of piece of equipment or anything like that named after him. So good on you, man. Like,
yeah.
You're a fucking hero.
Definitely.
No. I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, he did die during another kamikaze attack in the Pacific, but
he was on the USS West Virginia.
Yes. There we go. Okay. West Virginia.
He got the Navy Cross.
Yeah. Which is like, I think it was like the second or third highest honor you can get in the Navy, something like that.
This motherfucker was on the Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, which will be its own episode during Shark Week. I wanted to do it last year, but I fucking was sick. So, but anyway, that's what we got for this week. It's not going to be our longest episode. It's not going to be our shortest, but we.
Are you about done?
Fucking big mouth. Seriously? Every time I fucking talk, he barks. It's like he knows what I'm doing in here. Son of a bitch. But anyway, that's what we got for this week. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I had no idea who you were picking. No freaking clue. And I was like, okay. And it's like,
I had no clue who you were
fucking
picking.
Fucking badass.
Yeah, like I said, I wanted to do someone that, you know, was far better than, was not far better, but different.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, a typical, like I said, not typical military, you know, killed 20 guys or whatever. Neither one of us did the typical, you know, military type badass type of, you know, well... Never mind. You sort of. You kind
of. Hey, man, it's not my fault. Right. It's not one my fault. I love Tombstone. And it's just like, Wild West Lawmen? Yeah, that's cool. Wait, I can cover one for Black History Month? Fuck yeah, let's do this. But,
it's true.
Yeah. No, I had a lot of fun with this. Like, we got to do more badasses. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, badasses are fun.
They're fun. They're easy to find stuff for. They're fucking crazy. So that's a plus.
And I like, you know, I kind of like this to expand my knowledge. And, you know, like I said, found Bessie and, you know, found that she was just a badass in her own right for going out on a limb and just doing what she wanted to fucking do and screw society.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
No, so I mean, hit us up on Facebook. Go to Dark Windows Podcast. We're on there, and we're also on Instagram at Dark Windows Pod, Twitter at Dark Windows Pod. Not so much on Twitter. We apologize.
I gotta get better at Twitter. I'm fucking lazy.
Yeah, we both got it. And you can email us at
darkwindowspod@gmail.com.
Just, you know, tell us how bad we are or how great we are.
Mostly how good I am and how much Kevin sucks at his job.
You can do that. I don't care. Tried it once, won again.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, and you, you could also.
You literally just shit your own mouth over there.
I did.
Nice try, buddy.
Yeah. And if you don't want anybody else to hear what you're listening to, you know, for this episode or any other episode, because sometimes we talk about shit that you just don't want people to listen to because it's that bad, go to studio. Check out their headphones and earbuds. Find what you want, because we know you will. Put them in your basket. Go to checkout. Put the discount code of DarkWindows15 and get 15% off.
Yeah.
Your whole order.
And then go to darkwindowspod.threadless.com and get a t-shirt or a sweatshirt or stickers or
a skateboard.
I don't think anybody needs to get a skateboard, but all like
right, whatever.
Get some fucking shirts or something. Anyway, I've got one more thing I wanted to mention. One of our listeners actually just started a pretty cool Facebook page, and I had to go on and like it. His name is Robert LaFond, and he was running a page called Travels Unknown. I think he has a YouTube channel to go with it. But he's mostly talking about like all the places he's going. He lives in Florida and just kind of traveling around, and the pictures he's got on his Facebook page are awesome. So yeah, go check it out. And if anybody else does anything like this, let us know, because I would love to plug other people's stuff on here.
Yeah.
Because we got some crazy talented people on this page.
Exactly. I mean, we got other people.
We've also got John Gerlach on the page, who runs a Facebook page called Cryptids, Legends, Lore, and Crazy Stories, who has like 2,500 more followers on his page than we do for the show. But he's got he's always posting good articles on there too. So yeah, if you guys do anything like that, let us know. We will plug the shit out of it. Anyway, that's all I've got.
Is it?
It is.
Cool.
And now I got to start working on next week's.
Yeah. So until then.
Just because you can't see out into the dark doesn't mean the dark can't see into you.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Goodbye.